Today I'd like to talk to you about Fred Merkle, born December 20th, 1888, died March 2nd, 1956. His major league debut, September 21st, 1907 for the New York Giants, and he had his last major league appearance September 26, 1926 for the New York Yankees. A .273 batting average, 82 home runs, 733 RBIs, and 272 stolen bases. That's not very exciting, but it'll make sense of why we're talking about him in a little bit here. Played for the New York Giants, the Brooklyn Robins, the Chicago Cubs, the New York Yankees. He had the nickname Bonehead, and he played first base. But he is known for this one play called the Merkle Boner. And I'm going to let Ken Burns and his documentary on baseball describe what happened that day. So listen to this story.
Monday, September 21st, 1908. Here is something for the Giant fans to consider. Suppose Fred Tenney should be crippled. That would be a calamity, wouldn't it? Yes, it would in one way, but it wouldn't keep the Giants from winning the pennant. There is a young fellow on the bench named Fred Merkle who can fill that job better than 9/10 of the first baseman in the league. He is crying for a chance to work. Chicago Tribune. The final weeks of the 1908 National League season saw a fierce struggle between the Chicago Cubs and their arch rivals, the New York Giants. With the pennant on the line, they met at the Polo Grounds on September 23rd. John McGraw had to make a last-minute change in the Giant lineup. First baseman Fred Tenney was injured. Substituting for him was an eager 19-year-old rookie named Fred Merkle. In the bottom of the ninth, there were two outs and two men on for the Giants, with the score tied 1-1. Giant pinch hitter Moose McCormick was on third, representing the winning run. Fred Merkle was the runner on first. Al Bridwell, the Giant shortstop, was up to bat. He lined the very first pitch past Cubs second baseman Johnny Evers into center field for a clean single. Moose McCormick lumbered home. The Giants had won the game, and most likely the pennant. Jubilant Giant fans began pouring onto the field. At that moment, Fred Merkle was on his way to second. Alarmed by the oncoming crowd, and convinced the game was over, he turned and ran for the clubhouse. Johnny Evers saw that Merkle hadn't touched second. If Evers could get the ball and touch second himself, the winning run would be canceled by the foursome. The Cubs would still have a chance. But first, he had to find the ball. Joe McGinnity, the Giants' third base coach, saw what Evers was up to, won a scramble for the ball, and threw it into the stands. A fan in a brown bowler caught it and started home with his trophy. But two Cubs chased the man through the mob, knocked him down when he resisted, grabbed the ball, and tossed it to Joe Tinker, who relayed it to Evers at second. Evers then jumped up and down on the bag to make sure the umpire saw what he had done.
Soon we saw Frank Chance arguing with Hank O'Day, who was the umpire in charge. But we really didn't find out what it was all about until we got into the clubhouse and somebody told us. Johnny Evers claimed he had gotten the ball and touched second base, so that Merkle was out. Al Bridwell.
Both teams claimed victory. It took Harry C. Pulliam, the league president, 2 days to disallow the Giant run and declare the game a tie, to be replayed at the end of the season if the two teams were deadlocked.
Trying to explain the Merkel boner in 25 words or less is like trying to explain relativity to kindergartners. It's a force out, and under the rules of baseball, and this had happened in a game umpired by the same umpire 3 weeks earlier, so Evers knew where he stood. Under the rules of baseball, the play was not completed so long as there was a force out possible, and with the force out concluded, the run that scored didn't count. It ended up determining who won the pennant that year. It also ended up leaving poor Fred Merkel with this eponym created to embarrass and humiliate him and his ghostly presence even to this day.
As a result of the Merkel boner, the Cubs and Giants were deadlocked when the regular season ended. And on October 8, 1908, a one-game playoff was held at the Polo Grounds. Christy Mathewson, having the best year of his career, was to pitch for the Giants. Even New York had never seen anything like it.
The Polo Grounds quit selling tickets by 1 o'clock, and thousands of elf tickets couldn't force their way through the street mobs to the entrances. The umpires were an hour getting into the park. By game time, there were thousands on the field in front of the bleachers. The stands were jammed. The elevated lines couldn't run because the people who had climbed up and were sitting on the tracks. Mordecai Brown.
Firemen drove onlookers off the elevated tracks with hoses, but they just climbed back up again. Fans without tickets tried to burn their way into the park and had to be beaten back by mounted police. Thousands more covered the rock-faced cliff called Coogan's Bluff that offered views of only part of the field. Never in the history of the game, one reporter wrote, have there been so many to see a game who didn't see it. From the stands, Three Finger Brown remembered, there was a steady roar of abuse. I never heard anybody or any set of men called as many foul names as the Giant fans called us that day. The Cub pitcher, Jack Pfister, was rattled. He hit Fred Tenney and walked Buck Herzog. Turkey Mike Donlin doubled, scoring Tenney. The Giants led 1-0. Pfister walked the next batter. It looked as if the Giants were about to get their revenge for Merkel. Then Cub manager Frank Chance sent for Three Finger Brown. Brown had started or relieved in 11 of the last 14 games of the season. He had received 6 letters threatening him with death if he dared pitch against the Giants. And he had to shove his way to the mound through the hostile, muttering crowd that had spilled into the outfield. But he was ready.
Arthur Devlin was up. Low average hitter, great fielder, tough in the pinches. But I fanned him, and then you should have heard the name that flew around me as I walked to the bench. I was about as good that day as it ever was in my life. Mordecai Brown.
In the third inning, the Cubs, sparked by Joe Tinker's triple, scored 4 runs off Mathewson, despite the ceaseless, angry hissing that greeted every Chicago batter. In the seventh, New Yorkers had reason to hope again as Fred Tenney drove in 1 run. The score was now 4-2 Cubs. And it stayed there through the eighth and the top of the ninth. The tension became too much for the Giants and their fans.
The scene was really the most disgraceful ever pulled off around here. Once, when Kling was chasing a foul from Doyle's bat, 2 beer bottles, a drinking glass, and a derby hat were thrown at him. Is that baseball? Does that do New York any good? Gee whiz, if we can't lose a pennant without dirty work, let's quit altogether. New York Evening Journal.
Play was stopped for a time because of fist fights in the stands. A newspaper reported the next day that seven men had been carted away, raving mad. Three Finger Brown stayed calm. Three Giants came up in the ninth, and three went down. It was all over. The Cubs had won the pennant and had to run for their lives. Some of our boys got caught by the mob and were beaten up some, Brown remembered. The manager, Frank Chance, was hit in the throat. Jack Pfister was slashed in the shoulder. They just barely made it into the clubhouse and had to be driven to their hotel in a paddy wagon, guarded by six armed officers. The Giants owner had gold medals struck for his players anyway, reading The Real Champions 1908. John McGraw never blamed Fred Merkel. It is criminal to say that Merkel is stupid and to blame the loss of the pennant on him, he said. We were robbed of it, and you can't say Merkel did that. But the public did blame him. Merkel stuck it out for 14 years in baseball, but never got over the reputation of being the man responsible for the boner play. Even Al Bridwell, whose single should have won the original game, came to sympathize with him. I wish I'd never gotten that hit, Bridwell said. I wish I'd struck out instead. If I'd done that, then it would have spared Fred a lot of humiliation. The Cubs' five-game World Series victory over Ty Cobb and the Detroit Tigers came as something of an anticlimax, although the Cubs have never managed to win another since.
Well, that changed, actually, 108 years later from that 1908 event. Well, when you think about the whole idea of being a bonehead, making bonehead plays, I think we all fall into that category. I want to read to you something from Isaiah chapter 55, verse 8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So we're all Fred Merkels, and we all mess up. It's just he did it on a huge stage. But if we were to look at each of us in our private lives and the times when nobody else is looking, the decisions that we make, the things that we value, it would say a lot about us. And so I don't know where this devotion finds you this morning or today, but I'd like you to remember that we all are in definite need of the Lord.